It's hard to hear the truth with so many people talking. Join your host as he engages in unfettered conversation with folks sharing their perspective on how businesses, political policies, technology, and world events impact their families and communities. If you want to turn your thoughts into actions, listen to the Brother of Light, dropping wisdom in your left ear and knowledge in your right.
Another episode of Folks Unfettered. I'm your host, Gene Folks, and today we are remote. We are at Jay-Z Roc Nation's Made in America 2022 here in support of Leah Stauffer, who is the founder of halfamillionkids.org. And as I mentioned on our last episode on the Folks Unfettered page, on a LinkedIn page, that Folks Unfettered, as well as Folks International Group, Inc., will be supporting Half a Million Kids. And we are so super blessed to have Ms. Stauffer with us. And I want to tell you a little bit about her. So Leah has launched several businesses, and she has had several nonprofit endeavors. She is an accomplished entrepreneur, an award-winning film producer, author, teacher, and just an overall visionary. And I'm gonna go off script here for a minute. One of the things that has attracted me to Ms. Stauffer has been her commitment to trying to place a half a million kids in permanent homes who are currently in foster. And I hope that Lee and I will have a very frank and open conversation about her journey and how it aligns with my own personal journey of spending some time in foster care myself. And so she has the same, it just takes a certain person with a certain spirit to care enough about children to want to see them have a permanent home. And so this is a very personal, a very hopefully inspirational conversation that we're gonna have with Leah about children and families and how we can positively impact the lives of those around us. So, Leah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Gene.
How are you?
Thank you for having me. Thank you for coming to Made all the way from
Jersey.
From Jersey to Philly.
Yeah.
We're at Made in America Festival. We have our booth. Thank you for coming and broadcasting from here. But mostly, thank you for connecting with our mission and what we're doing and being so generous of spirit and willingness to help forward this mission. I really am blessed and appreciative to have met you. So thank you.
No problem. So, you know, if you've been paying attention to the program, our audience is pretty open. I want to say thank you. I think we had that conversation about you not only providing us with tickets to come and see this, but also because of the reason why you did it. And so it takes a courageous person to put themselves out there to have this mission. And so I think over the next 45 minutes to an hour, I hope to have a very frank conversation with you. And hopefully we can have our audience connect with you and your mission. So I have gratitude and spirit to be able to have met you. And folks, I can tell you, she's very, very energetic. She has a lot of high energy. And you can tell she's got a lot of passion. And for me, I sense that spirit that I had with not only my grandmother, who was a foster parent, but also her best friend, my Grams, who was a foster parent as well. And so you have not only encouraged me to come to Philly, which I don't need an excuse to do that, but boy, you really, really are motivating me to do that. But also,
Bravo, we got you here. Yay.
Because of your mission and because of what that means to me. And so we like to highlight just remarkable individuals on our program most of the time. So I'm going to stop talking.
Yeah, but you're giving me too much credit because you said it takes courage for me. And honestly, this is like a divine mission. It's like I feel like it's first it started very clear to me, it's my purpose for being on the planet. So it's not even about my courage, it's like when you, from the depth of your soul, connect with your purpose, you know it, and it's not about my courage, it's more about the just sort of recognition that like, this is why I'm here. And more recently, I actually switched the word purpose to anointing. This is like, I'm very clear this is my anointing, and how I started the charity, which, you know, you asked me about that. It was me just sort of doing the next thing in front of me, and then coming home, and I really feel this whole three-phase plan connected to our mission was almost like downloaded. And I'm really just the shepherd and steward of it. So it's not really courage, it's just doing what's the next thing in front of me that is aligned with, you just know when it feels right. Like, I'm guessing you're in your purpose, so you
yes.
know what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I think. You know, one of the things that I wanted to explore with you is how you, so let me tell you why you're important to me. And it's
I
one of the things.
I love being important to people. Go ahead, sorry.
is in our conversation, we had a phone call before in preparation for meeting today, and one of the things that you had asked me because of LinkedIn posts is would I be willing to share my story. And so you and I kind of talked a little bit offline about that, and so it's kind of a scary thing because it's been that sort of family secret.
And so you know I'm going to flip this interview on you and interview you?
No, no, no. Folks Unfettered is not about me. It's
but
not about me.
Your story is powerful.
I'm sorry?
Your story on this subject matter is powerful. So I think your base and people that are connected to you would love to know
yeah.
more about your story.
You know, one of the things that when I got introduced to you through a mutual friend, one of the things, when I heard your story and we talked.
Should we be giving him a shout out?
No? Sure, absolutely. Always give people a shout out.
Keith Mency in the house.
You know, and I have to share this because this really started. I've got to give Keith a shout out since you mentioned it. This really started when I was walking down the street and Keith and his wife own a salon, and Keith has a men's line that he and I discussed. Which I would plug his men's line if I had a sponsorship. No, I'll plug it anyway, though. And one of the things that we started talking about in that casual conversation was purpose. And so, like you mentioned, I am in my purpose. And as a private person, this would be the last thing that I thought I was doing. This was supposed to support my management consulting and leadership development firm. And it really, I started having conversations with people that started steering me towards where I was supposed to be, just sort of that voice in the wilderness, so that I could shine a light on them. Which is pretty.
Well, that's leadership.
Right.
So it's
right. Like
what
it's
you
like.
You actually do.
Right. It's just like the platform, right? And so I never thought it would become so personal. And so shout out to Keith for doing that because he had mentioned his friendship with you and your purpose. Keith didn't know me from a hole in the wall, right?
Right.
And
when
so
we discovered this was a surprise.
Right.
This coincidence.
Right. It's coincidence. I don't know. Yeah, I think.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
Divine again. That's
right.
The divine.
That is a divine.
Co-creating with
that's
us.
Exactly right. Right. And so when I heard, I didn't tell Keith, and I perked up, and then I talked to you, and I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, and we tend to work on being transparent and authentic. And so a lot of people, they know me from being under contract with NBC and NBC's Apprentice, and then talking about my Air Force career, how I spent 10 years in the Air Force, the fact that obviously I went to undergrad and have a master's and have done some pretty interesting things. And a lot of times on social media, we talk about all these really fantastic, good things. And so if you've ever done business with me or been in a personal relationship with me, with your friend or otherwise, what very few people know about my life is that when we had come from Jamaica to this country, probably about five, my father left. And then shortly after that, my mother left. And I always like to give a caveat that I tend to try to understand human beings as I've aged and they are imperfect. My mother and father they weren't addicted to drugs, it wasn't alcohol. They grew up in very, very good families. My mother was just a restless soul.
You're so beautiful the way you put it.
Yeah, she really was
a
restless soul.
Say it a million different ways.
I went to 14 high schools.
Yeah, so it's very like loving of you to position, like describe it that way.
Right. I think, you know what, honestly, Lee, I think that we tend to wither, and this is why your organization is so important to me, is because I think we tend to throw people away or actually tend to treat them kindly but in a pitiful way.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things why I never shared my story, because I don't need that sympathy. Yeah. There's a lot of great, wonderful things that came out of that, right?
Yeah. And so many qualities get developed when you come from, because you come from foster care as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You develop really amazing qualities and resilience and strength and capabilities and independence. And
Right. So here we are, two foster kids.
Yeah.
Right. We are two foster kids who really, because of, and what I want to bring light to is that the journey hasn't always been easy. There's always those internal struggles that you have in dealing with, you know, abandonment issues and family ties. And, you know, I have eight siblings. And so after my mom left, she was gone for maybe about a year. I was eight. I was left with five siblings. So it was 6 months at the time. And I ran out of money. But anyway, but we ended up.
Super quick, though. You're eight. How did you feel that year?
Sorry?
You said it was a year. She left. It was a year. How did you feel?
You know, I think I didn't, you know, you and I talked about this before.
Yeah.
I think that I didn't really, looking back on it, it's kind of, I tend to separate myself from that little guy. But I think that when, you know, when you're eight and you're changing diapers and, you know, and you got to figure out how to get formula.
Because you're taking care of those younger siblings.
Yeah.
At eight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I really, sorry, I don't mean to turn it, but I want people to really get that.
Right.
Like, imagine you're a parent out there hearing this.
Yeah.
Imagine your eight-year-old being responsible and taking care of the younger siblings.
Yeah.
Like, that's for real, not just in your story, but that's for real going on.
That's correct.
With foster children.
That's correct.
But your story, this is why I love your story.
Well, and I think the reason why it becomes important to share something so
personal
is because of what you just said. I don't think that even within, because I come from tough people, right? And so we tend to have an attitude of glossing it over. And I would say that I have done therapy, and my therapist always said to be very resilient personality. And that sounds great. But I think that over the course of my career, my life, even with my children, they're learning, as the rest of the world is learning, that their father was in foster care. They just think I'm just a mean old guy.
That's fascinating, that they're just learning that.
Right.
That is really.
And they're 36 and 32.
Yeah.
Right.
And they're like, what?
Right. Like, wait, but.
You left that out. Dad.
Right. right.
This is kind of a big part of your story.
Right. But I think there, to some, and I don't know if you felt this way, to some degree, there was a sense of shame. Right, because you know, you go to school and you get people with two parents, and you, in some cases you wonder what's sort of wrong with me. And
for me, I just felt different.
Yeah,
like it was I remember when my mom told me I was adopted. Mm. I was probably six or seven ish, and I remember exactly where we were in Ansonia, Connecticut. I was sitting in the corner the counter, and she sits me down and she's like, "You're special because you were chosen."
Right.
And she said, well, yes, but here's the flip side of that coin. You're chosen because you're special, yes, by you, thank you, I love you, but you left out the part that I also was given away.
Right.
So, cool, positive spin on that.
Right.
But I remember this, like, almost cognitive dissonance, like, I hear you.
Yes,
but
yes.
I remember, it was almost like an out-of-body experience, like, I almost was like, huh? I don't even understand what you're saying. Like, cool, I'm special, I got it, but wait, what? And then I remember, I just was like, okay, can I go outside and play with Christy now?
Right.
Literally, my next turn. And then that was that.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't till years later. I mean, I remember in high school, I wouldn't even tell people I was adopted. So I think if you're not willing to tell people you're adopted, there's probably shame there.
Right. Exactly.
Might be what that means.
Right.
And it wasn't until I came fully into myself and my like really loving like who I am on this planet and the person I am, then I was like, oh, okay.
Right.
I'm adopted.
Right.
And yes.
Right.
My parents who adopted me are super amazing. But there's something around. Like, I don't kill spiders and I, like, feed the squirrels. So I have a hard time. It's hard for me to comprehend how you give a child away. Like, it's just a hard thing. But yet I also, like you, when you describe your mom as a restless soul, I also, we're human.
Right.
Humans are imperfect.
Right.
We're all are. So I also get, like, my birth parents being, you know, she was 16, he was 18, he was black, she was white, Italian Catholic.
Right.
Back in the day when I was born.
Right.
That's a no-go.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so, yeah. Yeah. I would, you
know, but I didn't know anything until 3 years ago when I met her. But all growing up, I knew nothing. I knew three things. My birth name was Lynn Marie Luciani. Right? I'm like, oh, cool, mafia.
How cool is that?
This is cool.
Yeah.
And I knew Catholic Charity Services Harrisburg. And I knew my birth dad was half black, half white. Because when I was born and my family who adopted me was white, they don't tell you a lot about...
Right.
They don't tell the parents a lot.
That's right.
But when there's a race reason,
that's right.
They have to let them know just in case the white family wouldn't want the black child,
right.
You know,
that's
mixed
child. That's right. That's right.
And
that's
my parents don't care. They were like, baby girl, what?
Right.
Yeah, we're
right.
So in any event, I think there's two sides to that coin.
There's two sides to that, and there's two sides of the coin, and I will share this with you, and I hope she doesn't get mad at me.
Uh-oh.
But my aunt,
aunt
is biracial, and she was adopted because my grandmother was a foster parent,
right.
And that's part of the story is that when my mom was, you know, everybody has that person in their family where a parent's like, oh, I'm not so proud of you. And so my grandmother, my grandmother had already been a foster parent. And so when we ended up in foster care, we were there for about a year. And then my grandmother's best friend.
And we is how many?
Me is, there's six. There were six of us. And so there was me and five siblings.
All in foster care, together.
Yeah, and not together. They split us up two by two.
Which is
back
something
in the day.
People don't realize.
Right.
75% of siblings
there
in foster care get separated.
Right. That's
75%.
Correct.
So again, to take this home for everybody. So think of your kids or your nieces or your nephews or your friends' kids that you love or whatever your situation. Think of kids that are siblings and imagine 75% of them getting separated.
I didn't know that, but we were separated.
Yeah.
And then when you make a very good point. Then when you were a child of color, right? And then you start falling into, I consider us blessed because who my grandmother was. I can't imagine children that don't have that because, you know what I'm saying? I think in this country, we kind of put blinders on and we always wonder, this is why this conversation is so important, because we always wonder, well, what did they do? And as a child, when all you want is just to be loved and cared for,
even as an adult. But
let me
ahead.
Tell you, even listen, right now, I need
bar.
Right. I'm like this.
I'll
right,
still take it.
Right. I'm like,
you.
Right now, I'm like, my father's 82, and I'm like, anytime you want to come and father, dude, let's make it work.
It's never too late.
Right. It's never too late. Come and daddy me at this point, right? But I think you bring some very good statistics to the point that it's not always rosy, right? Yeah. And people say, oh, these kids have development problems. They have this. Well, their parents left.
Exactly.
You know, we talk about trauma. It's like, well, mommy left. The people that are supposed to care for you walked out for whatever reason. Now, some of it, I wanted to bring this up too, because as I was talking to some of the people that were coming to your booth.
Yeah. Which we should say who
yes,
they are.
Yes, absolutely.
So,
that's on you.
So here at Made in America, this is, I got to give a shout out
you
to
got
Rock
to
Nation
shout out.
And Jay-Z and Miss Carter and the whole group at Rock Nation. They, Rock Nation Philanthropy, they're so generous. They get that foster kids don't have anyone necessarily to buy a ticket like this. So they have been gifting since inception of this festival. They have entrusted me to steward tickets for foster kids to come to this festival. So the first year, I think they gave me 500, and next year, you know, a couple hundred, and 600. So,
right.
And this
right.
year, they gave me 1,000 tickets.
That's amazing.
And the agencies that I worked through went a little crazy, and so I had to call back 3 times to try and up the number. They ended up gifting foster children 1,900 tickets to this festival.
Wow.
That is incredible generosity, and I have
that
to
is.
Shout them out. Rock Nation, Jay-Z, and Miss Carter, thank you so much for caring about these kids. For so many of them coming to our booth and doing their thank yous and stuff, I kept saying, how many have been to a concert? This is a first for
wow.
so many of them. So it's really, it makes me so happy.
That is, that makes me, it does make me happy. And you know what, I can say this, you know, there's always a lot of times, I think the reason why I didn't tell my story
yeah.
is because a lot of times you feel alone. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
And we're talking about the 70s, and so it wasn't very popular, right? And so I was listening to a couple of people that come to the booth, and they were, you know, she didn't realize we were, I was here to do the podcast with you, and she was saying, you know, that she was a foster child, but, you know, she got caught up. You know, her parents got caught up in cocaine epidemic. And I want to touch on this for a second. One of the things about the show program that you guys heard in the opening is that we talk about political policies, we talk about technology, we talk about race, and we talk about culture. And it's if we're not having these conversations, then nothing ever changes.
Right.
And so there are political policies and procedures that have been put in place over the years that have negatively impacted the lives of people of color, and we never think about the children.
Right.
We never think about the incarceration rate being so high that you're going to leave single family homes. Now, we're not saying don't have personal responsibility, but if we're going to have mental health issues and AA and Narcanonymous and all sorts of stuff when it hits the middle class neighborhoods,
yep.
then either we're going to have to embrace the fact that mental health, drug addiction, and rehabilitation should be available to everyone across
and for these
socioeconomic
kids,
standpoint. And trauma. Absolutely
there's
trauma.
So
say
much
that.
Trauma
yes.
because not only are they dealing with the separation of the most primal core relationship,
right.
but then many times they're displaced from the home to even the school.
Right.
So there, sometimes it's
right.
trauma upon
right.
trauma.
Right.
And the some of the statistics are crazy. Like children in our country, about 20% of kids in this country are on prescription meds. When you look at the foster population, it jumps to about 80%. And you know, you mentioned the behavioral. It's like, well, of course, like if they're going through trauma, they're getting re-traumatized through multiple things I could talk about. But so I just, one of the things that's so important to me, and I'm so appreciative you're doing this, is we as a country need to be aware that these kids exist.
Right.
So here's the
right.
problem from where I sit,
right.
which is it's not the cool cause. I see more on pet adoption.
Yes.
Than
yes,
adoption.
Billy.
And you know what? It's
yes.
not cool. And
no.
I was
right.
seeing this fabulous, I'm an animal lover. So Subaru has this great campaign. They spent like $28 million or something close to that to have, you know, 23 million pets adopted. And I think, wouldn't it be amazing if a company felt like getting behind the kids in that
right.
way? Because
right.
it
brilliant.
Is so not cool
right.
that
right.
we as a society ignore
right.
that these kids exist.
Right.
So I just have my eye on this, and I was going to do a documentary film. That's how I started this. I was doing a documentary
right.
film.
Right.
To raise awareness, to get these kids a voice, get them on the map. And through a series of interviews I was doing with social workers, and then I went to something called the Match Party, which I'm happy to tell you about or another time. Or
yeah,
whatever.
no, share with the Match Party, because this is fascinating.
Yeah, this is why I opened the charity.
Right, that's,
so
please express, listen, you guys got to hear this. Let me just do a plug for you real quick. So where can you be found? Where can get
so
people that are interested?
So our website is halfamillionkids.org.
Right.
So Half a Million Kids is a 501c3 that I opened late 2015 due to the story I'm about to tell you about a Match Party.
Okay.
And they can find us at halfamillionkids.org or Instagram at halfamillionkids. And I'm
okay.
Leah, so they can always reach out to
okay.
me to direct.
So folks, you know, Leah's going to share a story with you about something she told me, and And I don't want you to fall out of your chair, but here's the thing. If you have a heart for children, you know, let's because what Leah's trying to do is more than about money. But obviously it takes money to help find children a nice home. More than the money, you've got the capacity to love. You've got the capacity to help develop another human being. Then I strongly encourage you to check out her website, halfamillionkids.org, and get involved and engaged. And if you can't do it or you're not in a position to do it, talk to somebody else, refer somebody else so that they can do it too. You know, we have no problem talking about the latest movie. Oh, you should go see movie XYZ, or you should check out the latest cell phone. If we are all talking about making the world a better place, it starts right here, it starts right now. And at the end of the day, listen, I'm an animal lover too, I love dogs, but you're right. We spend more time, more money, and more commercials on our budget to take care of Fluffy or to take care of Whiskers than we do children that have done absolutely nothing wrong.
Nothing.
Right?
They're no fault of their own.
They're no fault
of
their
abuse,
own.
Abandonment, and neglect.
Right.
It's the reason. They're not juvenile delinquent. It's the parents that were dealing with issues.
Right.
And it's not to demonize the parents. It's like,
again,
everyone's human going through this life experience.
Right.
It is what it is. But the children become collateral damage to the conditions that their parents are in. And that's just the fact. Okay, so what can we do to give these kids a voice? And through the documentary, a friend said, because I had Philadelphia Films back, you know, years back, and they said, well, you keep talking about this, why don't you do something about it?
Right.
And they're like, you can make a film. So I was thanks, yes. Let's raise awareness. So I embarked on this documentary, and I was interviewing social workers and families and children, and this one National Adoption Center, I'm sorry, I'm going to say who.
It's okay.
Maybe I shouldn't, but anyway, National Adoption Center invited me to a match party.
Right.
They say you can't film, but you can take notes. I'm like, what's a match party? I'm like, I mean, I'm single, but what? Huh? No, I'm kidding.
That's okay.
So I go to this match party, and what it is, it's older youth, 13 and above, because the system will tell you that those kids are harder to place, 13 and above, and the hardest to place are boys, and the harder than that is black boys. So that's an interesting statistic, noteworthy. And then, so I go to the match party, and it was on a Saturday, and it's designed to create an environment for the older youth to interact with potential families interested in adopting. And at first, I was not really thinking too deep about it. I was like, oh, okay. The night before, I was going to the match party, which was at Arnold's Go-Kart, which is like a game center. It hit me. I was packing up my briefcase, and I was like, oh my God, these kids are figuring out what they're going to wear tomorrow to maybe be chosen to have a family. So it was 18 children coming and 10 families. And I thought, the math doesn't work. If there's 18 kids and 10 families, there's not enough families for the kids. And coming out of corporate sales back in my 20s, if I needed to sell one account, I might have to make 20 calls to get 10 appointments to do 5 proposals to do one sale. So I already knew you could have perfect match and these numbers don't work.
Right.
Like, okay. And I started feel, so I go to the match party and they have like an icebreaker room before the game center. And all the kids are going around sharing, and they separate the kids from the parents. And I went in the parent room and they said, here's tokens.
Right.
If you're interested in talking to one of the kids, here's tokens to play games.
Right, right.
So I'm immediately like, well, what if you're the kid no one talks to?
Right.
I'm like, okay, this is, I'm meandering around watching what's happening, taking my notes and all this. And I start asking the social workers, like, so how many families or individuals do you need to reach to place one child? And they didn't have the number. It was like 15, 20. And you know, corporate America, they would have that down to a science.
That's right.
Right?
That's
and so I'm like, okay, maybe those social workers just didn't know, fine, let's. But I feel like that's a very important number in the story because you're dealing with children getting placed in homes. We should know how many people we need to reach to place one child.
I get it.
It's just, it becomes math at that point.
Right, right.
So I said, okay, the worst case scenario, 20. 20 times 18, they should have 360 families here. Five families showed up out of the 10.
Wow.
So now you have 18 kids competing, like, look at me, I'm so great. Like, this is, I was like, very uncomfortable.
Right.
And fast forward through the match party, at the end, we all go back to that same room, and everybody's got, and they had gift bags on the table. And this just, so the, they, for, I'll give you the example. It was a real life Nadir that I remember. They had him come up for his gift bag. He's like 14 years old at the time. And they start reading out of the booklet.
Right.
Nadir's 14. He's kind of quiet at first, a little bit shy. And then once he gets to know you, he'll open up. He loves right. cats and dogs. And one day he wants to be a boxer.
Wow.
And he's standing there. Yeah. And I'm like, he's 14. Like,
right.
you are, I don't want to project, but I'm like, you are humiliated.
Yeah.
I felt, maybe I was projecting, but I just don't see how that's good. And I got in the car, and I broke down crying. And I called my father, and I said, Dad, thank you for adopting me. And I can't even imagine going through such an experience. And one kid, Tyler, it was his fifth match party. The resilience it takes. So my dad, when I told him straight, he said, it sounds like a slave auction. I'm like, it literally felt like that, Dad.
It does.
It felt like that.
I
couldn't wrap my head around it. No. I'm pro social worker, okay?
Right.
But social workers, how is this good for kids?
Right.
Because maybe you placed two, but the other
right.
16 are rejected
right.
and traumatized all over again.
No.
I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
So I went home, and this, I'll speed this up. This is why I opened the charity, though.
Mm-hmm.
The story from the match party till me reading the annual report mm-hmm. of the people hosting the mm-hmm. match party. As I read their annual report, they had their different marketing initiatives.
Right.
Match parties. Media on television, which again, you don't see a lot, but they were doing a little.
You don't see a lot.
You don't see a lot, but they were doing a little, so I could see
right.
what their stats were. So they didn't
right.
have their numbers run, so I pull out my calculator, and
right.
out of 158 children in 1 year, 15 in the match party scenario got placed. That's 10% conversion. When I did the ran the numbers on the media, out of 62 or 68, 26 had been, so it was a 26% conversion. With media. So I said, oh, well then we need to do a media campaign.
Right, exactly.
Why are we doing match parties?
Right, right,
you
right.
You don't even get, it's a lower return. Why are you even wasting your time? Like,
right.
do more media. Like, just,
yeah, it just
but
makes sense.
It told me a lot that they didn't actually run the numbers
right.
in their annual report.
Right.
Like, so what I also realized, in fairness, social workers are trying to deal with an influx of kids coming into this system. They're just trying to make sure they have somewhere to sleep, somewhere to eat, that they're clothed, they don't have enough resource families. So they don't really have time to do the analysis I was embarking on, and the research, and who's gonna design the marketing campaign,
right.
and all of that.
Right.
So I really, and the social workers at the grassroots level are subject to the way the system is set up.
Right.
So what I also discovered, and you'll see how it all comes together, it culminates into what we created. We have a three-phase plan that is based on the story I'm saying now. So those discoveries at that match party, then I discovered through research, the federal government, in 2016, they were spending $4.4 billion a year on foster care and adoption. Billion, with a B.
Wow.
Now, 2020,
right.
$5.3 billion. So
right.
they've increased by $900 million.
Right.
But the results and the numbers stay the same. If you go back in history, the
right.
numbers don't
right.
move. So I started to say, wait a minute. How is this system constructed?
Right.
And people say it's a broken system.
Mm-hmm.
I say it's a poorly constructed system because it's set up like the prison system.
Right.
So agency funding is tied to
gotcha.
Kids in the system.
Okay.
So there's a lot wrong with the structure.
Right.
From the get.
Right.
And so the social worker is just working within the system they have, right? It's the leadership.
Trying to do the job.
It's then you're talking about the federal government. And you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I quickly realized, well, no one's going to listen to me. These are, like, I need some results behind me.
Mm-hmm.
So what I realized is we need a media campaign for
right.
these kids to raise
right.
awareness.
Right.
And we need to recruit more than enough families
right.
to place every child eligible for adoption. Out of the 500,000 children in foster care, about 125,000 are eligible for adoption. That means the courts have terminated the parental rights.
Right.
So those kids are never going to go home. They're going to age out at 18.
Right.
There's no reason they shouldn't be adopted if they want to be.
Right.
So they're either in a group home or they get shuffled home to home. Sometimes they're in 12 homes by the age of 10.
So what happens when they age out? Because someone asked me that when I had posted on on LinkedIn and talking about halfamillionkids.org, right? And so what happens when they age out? Like, do you have an answer? Is there a part of your initiative
to help? State by state is different.
It's different.
And county by county is different. So
right.
some counties go beyond 18 when they age out, and they offer services and programs.
Right.
So there might be some support financially, but not everywhere. Sometimes they're just on
That's
their
true.
Own.
That's true.
But it's more about, like, where do they go for Christmas?
Right.
Where are they living? How do they sign a lead? Like, there's so many
So it really is like the prison system.
Right.
It really is that when you get out, you know, we say these people pay their debt to society, right? And so when they get out, then all of a sudden they're marked a felon. You can't go to school.
Exactly.
You can't get an apartment.
And it's disorienting, right?
It's disorienting. So when you talk about children
trying to maneuver,
who did nothing wrong other than have human parents that made mistakes that we've all made, in some cases. We treat them exactly the same way.
I really.
And in some cases, aren't we now having a feeder system between human trafficking and because kids are living on the street?
Oh my God! Don't get me started on
maybe prostitution.
Oh my God.
Maybe lack of education.
Yeah.
Homelessness, criminal justice issues. I mean, when we really think about some of these organizations that may even benefit.
I know, that's what's
right?
really troubling. I don't want to keep hitting you with statistics, but because
please, all statistics.
So
I want everybody to throw all your statistics. No, because
but
this is important.
50% of kids that age out of the system end up, now 50%, so there's still good news here.
Right.
50% end up either homeless, incarcerated, drug addicted, or on economic government
assistance.
Dependency.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So that's 50%. Now, there is another way route kids go where they become like perfectionist overachievers, like don't want to be rejected.
That would be me.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I never wanted to fail. Feel sorry for me. Do not want to be rejected.
Exactly.
No, I have to be perfect.
Exactly.
And you know, and it's like no one would ever, it becomes this little bitty, people don't understand that this is this little thing that, that is the catalyst that drives everything, right?
We
and so because
we're protecting ourselves.
You have to protect yourself, right? And so then you start talking about, you know, look, folks, I'm going to say this. Not every parent has a drug or alcohol problem. My mother had a master's degree. She came from upper middle class neighborhood.
Yeah.
Sometimes people are just people.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
My mother liked to have fun and go out with girlfriends and party, and she was a woman and had her heart broken by my father, and they were married for quite a while. And so, you know, if you've ever been there, then you kind of, you know, want to go me. That becomes difficult when you have children,
yeah,
right? But as I've aged and grown older, I understand that too. And so the reason why I say that is because I want to paint a picture that I want to break this idea we have in our head that somehow my mother, my father, or any other parent that may be struggling with whatever it is they're struggling with is somehow less than, and then therefore we need to create a program for them. And really all we want as human beings is just to be loved, cared for, and in a secure place to be. And so you do have here, here's what's amazing. Folks, if you have ever wanted to share yourself with a child that may have ended up in foster care, I want you to really consider that Leah Stauffer and Gene Folks were both in foster care, and I think we turned out okay.
Really?
And you know, my foster family, before my grandmother intervened, wanted to adopt my sister and I.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting because we were lovable. And we fought it because we wanted our mother. I want people to understand that children, no matter how imperfect their parents are, for the most part, want their mommy and daddy, bottom line. And it takes a very special person that if we lose those parents to tragic incidents, whether it's their fault or their own, either we're a forgiving nation or we're not. So
you can ask Stephen.
Sorry?
Sometimes parents die.
Sometimes parents die,
and
right.
And they end up in foster
right.
care, which is
right.
trauma upon trauma again. But
right.
No, sorry,
you get more back from these children than you could ever give, right? And so it's so fascinating because I talked to my aunt, who was biracial and adopted. She, she'll get mad at me. She'll call, and she's younger than me. She's younger than me. My aunt is younger than me, right? Like I think I was 13 when she was like 5 or 6. She's in her 40s, you know. And so she, and yet that's my aunt. And she calls and checks on me and sends me a Facebook message. I have, she's country. She'll say, I haven't heard from you, nephew. Where you at? What you doing? What's going on? And it's so odd to me because my grandmother gave her a family. And folks, you can give children out there a home and a family, and you can fill yourself with a lot more love, a lot more compassion, and just.
And there's some other ways people can literally, because not everybody's up for.
That's true, right?
You know, but there, here's what I love about our three-phase plan. It's about awareness and recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
And so.
I'm recruiting.
People, yes. If people.
I'm recruiting.
Yes, you're good. Exactly. You're opening up to your network. That's exactly the point.
Right.
But no, if people, particularly in the social world we're in now, the social media world, if people all spread the word, if we all awaken society to these kids and we all share with our networks, the way the numbers break down and the plan we have, we can literally transform the system and transform the lives of these kids together, and everyone actually can participate. Because one, people, yes, could foster or adopt. Yes, people can donate and help support our mission. Three, they can spread the word. They can share it with their groups, their mom's group, their book club, their work life, their church life, their synagogue, their mosque, wherever it is. You share with everyone. Everyone was sharing with everyone. So our campaign, phase one of our plan, is to do a pilot program in Philadelphia, to awaken the region that these kids exist, to engage and mobilize the entire region to say together in Philadelphia, we need 1,600 individuals and families. That's actually not that many. If we awaken and we all spread the word, we together will find 1,600 individuals and families. And we, 500,000 kids, is taking on the responsibility of taking the intake and then vetting, sending them to agencies. We're not being an agency. We're like a referral source.
Gotcha.
And then we're going to shepherd people through the process, because there's a whole thing around that, which I won't tell you now, maybe a different episode, but there's a whole process. People go run into obstacles. So we want to shepherd people through so it goes smoothly.
Right.
And then the results base of Philadelphia, we're going to run a national campaign with celebrities who care about this topic to attract leaders in other cities to replicate the results of Philadelphia. And then together as a country, just by being awakened, being more conscious, caring, and using our networks to let people know there's a plan and not everyone has to adopt.
Right,
but you can,
right.
But
right.
By doing that, we take the 125,000, that 25%,
right.
And we create the possibility of getting those kids out of the system. I won't take you through phase 2 and 3 right now, but they relate to then slowing down the rate at which kids come into the system. So
right.
It relates to the role of the social worker and the caseload, and then the third is around the home environment for the kids remaining.
Yeah, can you expound on that? Because it's interesting because you, first of all, that's a great plan. And a couple
Thank
things
you.
I wanted to cover with you, but I'll cover this first. Do you believe that there is an opportunity to reduce the number of children that enter into foster care if we provide education and support to keep families together?
Yes, that's my
right.
phase two. Thank you, Gene, for
okay.
being so smart.
I didn't know that.
I know. I'm like, wow, good.
Right,
yes, you're
right.
tracking with me here.
Right.
No, phase two is transform the role of the social worker. There's like 600,000 social workers or something in the country, not all devoted to this topic.
Sure, sure.
There's an army of social workers who care about these
right,
kids.
Right.
But they're working from old tools. They're very modern, and you know, from even your leadership.
Right,
there's
right.
There's so much transformative work out
right,
there on
right.
the human and the human condition. To have social workers not be empowered with new
yeah,
tools,
yeah.
and they went to school for social work,
yeah.
and they're trying to do the best they can, but we need to empower these social workers. Mm-hmm. So first things first, we reduce their caseload by that 25%. Mm-hmm. There's a little more bandwidth to get them the training, mm-hmm. to get some new skills to work with families to stay intact.
Right.
So you slow down the rate at which kids come into right. the system. Return right. foster care back to its original intent, which is a safe, short-term right. safety net right. for, yeah, someone's parent is in maybe jail or rehab or something. And yeah, they go to foster care for a period of time, but social workers want to help. So we need to also transform the role of the social worker, and then third, the home environment. My plan, though, until we achieve phase one, which right. is this pilot right. program right. in the campaign, we're not going to be able to change, in my opinion, we're not going to change the system until we can show proof of concept.
No. Right, exactly.
And then who's
right,
going to
exactly.
argue?
Right.
If you're the only person in town
right.
who's got results after
that's
years
correct.
And years
that's
and
correct.
Years, what are people going to argue
correct.
With you?
That's right. No,
it's like,
no.
We're doing
right.
this because it works.
Right. right. And so here's one of the most interesting things, folks, that I wanted you to really take note of. And Leah, I'm going to ask you this because you made that joke about stats, right?
Yeah.
And so one of the things is that I would like for you to understand is that a lot of times, you know, when I was at Merrill Lynch and I talked to a lot of 501c3s about their particular mission and purpose, a lot of people think that charity organizations, you're a lot of, you know, people with hearts and because this is personal for you, they tend to forget that those executive directors of these organizations actually will do the research to get the facts and the statistics behind them, because that it is important. And that there are a lot of reasons why a lot of policies and funding are given to certain causes because of statistics and because I've been pushed that. So I would like for you to share some statistics that our audience may not know, that when you shared them with me, I didn't know. Like the matchmaking thing, let me just touch on it. You go there, but boy, the matchmaking thing, it really is like a slave auction.
It's
based
brutal.
On what you explained to me.
Yeah.
Can you imagine, someone say this, and then I'm sorry, because
no.
you ignited. Can you imagine they have these speed dating rounds? Is there anybody out there that's ever dated?
Yeah, right? We can't handle speed dating.
Can you imagine? We cannot. Can you imagine you go on date after date yeah. after date after date, and you're rejected and you're rejected. At some point, are you not going to ask what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
And now you may get to go back home to your apartment. You may get to go back home to your job.
Yeah.
But imagine if you were on a matchmaking site as if your life depended on it. Because a lot of these children, their lives really do depend
they
on
do.
It.
They
it's
do.
A very different matchmaking deal.
It's very different.
And can you imagine trying to say hi, my name is Gene, and I like to play with dinosaurs and action figures, and I like baseball, and I'll be a good boy.
Trying to
be a good sport
yeah.
about it. And a family looks at you and goes, yeah, no, not so much.
I mean, I can't.
Right.
And honestly, so I thought, you know what I thought? That I thought, okay, maybe that was a fluke.
Right.
Maybe that was a one-off.
Right.
So I went to another batch party.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, this is when I was still in documentary mode before I opened my chair. So right. I go to another match party at the Helicopter Museum, and it was the same format, same booklet, same whole thing. And the worst thing of all, and it's in my deck that I'm in. 2 years later, Nadir, who I mentioned, is there again in the book.
Wow.
2 years later. I can't even handle it.
I saw
so
that
intense.
When I was researching.
And
I saw
this, 2 years later, now he's got a tie on
wow.
and he's 2 years older, and I'm thinking the amount
yeah.
of resilience it takes
yeah.
to sustain
yeah.
that level of rejection.
Yeah.
I these kids are strong and they're resilient and they're amazing and they just need love and support, and we it is our duty. Sandra Bullock has a great quote in People magazine from years ago. It is our duty to take care of these kids. And she's adopted 2 children out of the foster care system, the U.S. foster care system.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's really amazing.
I did want to flip back though, because we got off it, but I want to hear about, because I think people would be very interested, your insight. The sibling thing,
mm-hmm.
the getting separated, because
right.
I jumped to the statistic,
sure.
but the human interest version, like real
sure,
story of that,
sure.
could you share with people?
Yeah, of course. There were 6 of us, right?
Yeah.
And so my, I'm the oldest of 8, and there is and I'll leave my siblings' names out of it, but there's me, and then there's my sister, and then my brother, And then I have another sister, and so we were close at one period of time, and I'll share with you how that's impacted us throughout our relationship and to this day, briefly. But we are close by how we were separated. And so the two siblings below me, we have the same parents.
You said there's eight, so the other two, the lowest,
The story goes like this. So my mother had, you know, she dated a few cats and wanted to marry her, and so I have siblings, right?
Gotcha.
So three of us from the same mother and father, And so I tend to try to say things differently because I know that in this country we have a lot of, I try to avoid stigmas, right?
Yeah.
And so... but truth of the matter is that three of us have the same parents. My parents were married for quite a while, and after several years, my mother ended up getting involved, you know, with someone else. And so we all consider ourselves just all siblings. We all have, you know, the same mom. And so one of the things that when I had run out of money, and I guess the neighbor called, and we ended up, there's a van that came. Now keep in mind, I was eight, so the sibling below me was maybe six and a half. And then the sibling below that was probably five, and then we had one that was maybe two and a half, 3 years old. And so they were young, if you can imagine the trauma that goes along with that. And so we had what you would call in most states, Child Protective Services came in. And so they split me, they brought me with my youngest sibling, right? My two half brothers were taken away. We would not see them until another 45 years later.
Does everyone hear that? 45 years.
45 years later, yeah. And so, and our relationships go by that because my sister and brother were put in foster care together. And it's funny because we were all comparing notes. We're not a very close family, but that's one of the things that being divided will do for you.
Yeah.
Most of our family wasn't in the country. My mother has a couple of brothers, but you know, we weren't really close with them because we moved a lot. And so that dynamic, when you're that disconnected, even internally we're disconnected, right? Because me and my one sister we have built a relationship that is just, she named my oldest daughter, right? And so, and most people consider her a half sibling, but she's not, she's my sister.
Yeah.
And then my brother and sister were close for a period of time. But when you put us together, there is a sense of disconnect because from an emotional standpoint, there were bonds that were broken.
Yeah.
And even we're all at a certain age now, we're still not close, but that was because of the environment that we were put in, partly because of, you know, internal family disconnect and dysfunction of the adults, but then also partly because it was then further, yeah, I'm lost for words here.
Don't you become like you're separated?
Yes.
So don't you then start to put that first layer of a shield of protection?
And we do it to each other.
Because it's
absolutely
like, oh wait, that hurt.
Right.
And I'm
right.
Not, why would I want to
right. And no one
that
wants to sit in a room having a conversation.
Yeah.
Right. About our pain and our
right.
and how we hurt.
So you
and
start to protect.
Right. Right.
Yourself.
Start to protect.
And
exactly.
And each trauma
right.
you further protect.
That's
protect,
correct.
Protect. So
that's
now
correct.
The sensitivity.
That's right. That's right. And my two brothers, before my mother passed, she passed a couple of years ago, and I think that sort of gave me freedom to have this conversation. She had, you know, prayed about, and there are a lot of circumstances that nuances that I won't go into, but sometimes when you have a single parent, especially a single parent of color, that when you make a mistake, sometimes you are exploited. Right?
Oh no, tell me more.
And so, well, just meaning that, you know, my mom, you know, back in that time when you have three or four kids,
right.
You know, it's hard to get an apartment.
Oh,
it's hard to get
gotcha.
A place to live. Right? And then sometimes when you're a single woman, not every male landlord is a cool cat.
Right. Right.
And my mother was very, very beautiful. Right. And so, right?
That's why you're so handsome, Gene.
No, I don't know about that. But and my mother was like, you know, some of those, and my mother had, and she was, they were like, you know, oh, you could stay here, but guess what? Right? And so, you know, I really thank God that she had the network that she had. I think she didn't want to, I think my mother had dealt with her own embarrassment and shame because we didn't come from a family that made some of the choices that she made. So it was just being ostracized there. But I think with my siblings and I, we aren't close because of that separation, right? My mother had twins. Two of the twins. Right? Two of the twins went with their father, and we're not close at all. They were the two that came while we were in foster care. My mother went and married another person, and anyway, you know, and I would say this about this gentleman, that he was not perfect, but after he found out that my mother had kids, he was an Air Force guy, which is why I ended up in the Air Force.
Oh, that's where the Air Force comes in.
And we, you know, we talk about a lot of things about what black men will and will not do. And this man, when he found out my mother had four or five kids, was like, bring them on in, right? Bring them on in. And so, but that lasting, lingering, based on your statistics, right? That lasting, lingering effect has lived, that legacy that's left from being divided up by a system has really fractured a family. So not only do you have to deal with the internal stuff of just a broken family with faulty parents, now you have a system that's waiting to catch you that doesn't mean you well.
Right.
And so where we were very close at one point, and we were in those houses together, and we all cried about wanting to be together, in order to control that many children, the parents and the system were very divisive.
Yeah.
And we got really blessed because my grandmother's best friend was the head of the welfare department, right?
Thank
and
God.
So, which back then was connected to, right, Child Protective Services, yeah. right? And then we were blessed to have my grandmother who we were. Those effects still
I don't know if you said
still
this
lingering,
earlier,
still
but
living.
Your grandmother's best friend mm-hmm. worked at child welfare,
mm-hmm.
and then she saw.
Yeah, our names came across her desk.
Come across yep. her desk,
and she called
and
my grandmother.
Your grandmother said, "Hey, you're grand."
Yeah, you're grand, and my grandmother was like, "What?"
What?
Hey, yeah, right, and because we were about to be adopted out. It's funny. I'll tell the story because we were all my siblings and I. We never really spent Christmases together. I think my sister and I. We've taken our first sort of road trip. I want people to really grasp when you grow up with a sibling, if you're mad at a sibling, right?
Right.
Get over it. Because my sister and I took one trip, went to go see Maxwell in concert. I introduced her to Maxwell.
He married my very good friend.
Huh?
He married my very good friend.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, he got ordained and he married at the farm I live on. He married my friend Josie and
oh,
David
wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Sidebar. Sorry.
Sidebar.
Go ahead.
And so we finally took our first road trip at a certain age, when you should be done with road tripping. First time we've never done that before.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, and so there are certain things that we don't talk about, and in that hurt and that pain and that powerlessness is a great divider for us because we can't talk about it.
I know,
right?
There's a girl,
you understand what I mean?
I would love you to interview this girl, Angela, or have her as a guest. There's a girl, Angela, that has a
right.
sibling.
You really did flip that on me, by the way. I went prepared to talk about it. That's okay, though. That's okay.
Very
go ahead, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I think that's actually another thing we do for the record.
What's
the deflect from ourselves.
Oh, right.
But anyway, right, sorry, right.
Yeah,
another.
Sidebar,
but
yep.
Angela is an interesting girl I interviewed years ago about the sibling. She tells this story. It's amazing. I think I sent it to you because
mm-hmm.
I have it on film. She talks about
yes,
her first memory
yes.
being put in a police car. There were three girls, and she has two older sisters, but it was about these three girls. They go into foster care.
Mm-hmm.
A family comes,
mm-hmm.
takes two of the three,
mm-hmm.
and she remembers, and she tells mm-hmm. on film, walking out of that foster care facility and looking back in the window and her older sister crying in the window.
Right.
I'm like, I can't even handle this.
Right, right.
But like,
it's
you
true.
Told,
right.
like, this is real. This
yeah.
happens.
Yeah, it
like
happens.
You,
like when they put us in a van, my brother talked, right. My brother, it's got my younger siblings. You know, I when I ended up connecting with, because I'm the oldest, I ended up connecting with my brothers. They connected with me on Facebook. And one of them I recognized because he had a birthmark on his leg. and he was a Marine. Now, keep in mind, out of my mother's eight children, four of us served in the military.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine.
Nature, nurture. I don't know.
Is that interesting, right? Right. And so it was interesting because, but yet the family dynamics are still fractured and there's a lot of pain there, right? Because we all have a different way to look at stuff. But I think that it's interesting to share your story is to hear my siblings talk about it's very uncomfortable to hear my siblings talk about me, you know, because it's you know, I got this call from my brother, and he said, hey, I don't know if you recognize me or remember me, but I believe I'm your brother, and the way you know is because I have a birthmark on my leg, and so would you come and meet me?
Oh my God, I can't.
And I drove to where he was, and I went to his office. He was working for a large company at the time. And I walked in, and he...
Were you nervous?
No, because, you know, when you, you know, listen, when you start changing diapers at eight, it's not what you're fearful of, right? And so I went to go meet this gentleman, and he lifted up his leg and showed me his birthmark. And it was a very emotional moment for both of us. He was my baby brother.
Because you remember that birthmark.
I remember that birthmark. And that's how he identified himself, and he and my other brother were put together. And here's the funny thing about adoption and foster care, is that my mother had searched and searched for 40-something years for them and didn't find them. And they were about 6 hours away from where she was living, just south. And I happened to relocate to that area.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that part.
Yeah, and so it's interesting because those wounds, you know, you can never really glue things back together. And I think that the connection between siblings can be very, very special. And I think that when that is
interrupted
and broken, those bonds, you really do then leave damage that can almost be everlasting. And so we end up in our tendency to think that what we can and cannot handle. Listen, I'm an advocate. Keep everybody together.
Yeah, I am a big advocate.
Keep everybody together.
Keep everybody
Do not
together.
Keep everybody together.
Absolutely.
Keep everybody together.
That's a second trauma.
Yeah.
You lose your
parents
and your siblings?
Yeah.
It's like trauma upon trauma. And why as a society do we think it's okay to be this unconscious that this is going on?
Yeah.
With 500,000 humans.
Yeah, and it is
kids.
Happening, right?
Like,
and
hello,
we're not right.
Everyone, wake
we're nobody
up, wake
special.
Up.
There's 500,000 of us. You know what I mean? Right. Right.
Like, I just want people to be more conscious and aware, and then not feel like. I remember when I first started doing this. My best friend, and she had two. My God, kids were young at the time, and I just mentioned the topic of foster care. She said, "I can't adopt. The girls, I can't have somebody." I said, Leslie, I was just sharing that these kids exist. I wasn't really asking you to adopt. So people get, like, if you bring this up, there's like this guilt or something. People feel like I should do. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying let's just start with being awakened and conscious and giving these kids a voice,
right.
Letting them be part of the conversation.
Right.
And the good news is if you break the numbers down and you tackle it in the model I shared, we can find 1,600 families together. So you can be someone who spreads the word. You can be someone who donates. You can be someone who adopts.
Right.
There's a whole role for everyone. It's a team effort.
Right.
Just like you have a quarterback and a running back and a wide receiver. And you got a team owner and you got a coach. Like, not everybody has to be in the same position here. But let's be a team.
That's right.
Get this done for the kids.
That's right.
Philly, we have 1.5 million population in Philadelphia County.
Yeah.
We're talking about the 5-county region. It's like 0.1% to have enough. So if we all just spread the word and filter them through 500,000 kids,
that's
refer them, we'll get it done. We'll change. We can do this together. And how happy I am to be heading a charity that has a results-based plan. We're not trying to exist just to exist.
I get
trying to exist
I get
to have a result that makes a difference for these kids' lives.
Right.
And I just encourage people to take this journey with us in whatever way is comfortable for them. Whether it's following us on Instagram.
Or so tell us how they can connect. So listen, folks, so you heard Leah. So tell us how, let the audience know where they can connect with you, how they can help spread the word, how can they get involved. So right now, listen, I can talk to you. I'm going to ask you to come back. I want to be able to have you and update with you on a regular basis. This is personal to me, obviously. And I know it's personal to you, and I think you are results driven. And let's do this, and I mean that.
I would love to come back, and I'd love to maybe bring on occasion, like it would be great, I could bring Angela, she could tell her story, maybe some social workers. Just, you know, whatever, I guess whatever people are interested in knowing, I mean, there's so much to know, and giving these kids a voice is part of it.
Right, so let's talk about how people can connect with you on Instagram, all the social media, phone number, website.
They can follow us on Instagram, and if they want it, they can DM me there, I'll definitely get it. The website again is halfamillionkids.org. Contact me direct, it's just my name, L-E-A-H at halfamillionkids.org. And yeah, those are the ways to connect. You don't want me giving out my phone number now.
That's up to you. That's you.
Yeah, actually you can.
Yeah,
you can
that's call on
me.
You.
Honestly, 484-994-8408, because it's for the kids, and if you need, if you are feeling so inspired and you want to reach me right away, actually the best way is to text me.
Okay.
Honestly, emails hard. There's so many for so many our lives.
Sure.
We all know.
Sure.
But if you really want to reach me quick, text me and or call. And I can't thank you enough for caring
No problem.
Your story. I mean, there's so much more to your story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're a smart lady. Yeah.
I think it'll be great to come back.
One
of these times, I'm going to flip the whole script.
That's okay. That's what the show's about. And folks, if you want more information about halfamillionkids.org, you want to connect with Leah, you can send us an email at wearefolksunfettered@gmail.com. And I'm actually going to give out the company's website, phone number. You can give us a call at 551-574-8661. That's the first time I've done it, but this call is very, very important. I want to be able to spread this word. Once again, that's wearefolksunfettered@gmail.com. I will be reposting Leah's contact information. She will be coming back to the show. She will bring whatever, you're welcome to bring whatever guest you want to bring to the program. We'll be doing a live piece on it. And as we launch Folks Unfettered, our streaming talk show, we'd love to have you and anyone that you want to have on the program. We are not going to do a matching service for kids.
Right. This is not going to match make show for kids.
This is not a show to match. But I want to thank you for your time, for being us here with the program.
Thank you.
I really am excited about it. I know I didn't even look at the clock.
Yeah, I don't know.
So I haven't looked at the clock because I really am so grateful to you for sharing your story.
Grateful for flipping
the script.
Thank you.
And any way that we can help and get the word out, we're going to run this until people literally get awake. Until they awaken and realize that the work that they're doing right now. So one more time, for how can people contact you?
Yeah, halfamillionkids.org or at halfamillionkids Instagram. And I can't thank you enough for understanding what we're doing, caring, getting it. Believing in the plan what we're up to, because this doesn't have to be like, you know, it's not like curing cancer where are we ever really going to cure cancer? This is like, we can actually do this. Why are we doing this? And, you know, some people say, well, you know, the government's spending $5.3 billion. Why aren't they doing it? Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? They're not. And I'm not going to let kids sit here just because the government should do this. Well, they're not. And I'm not okay with it. And I don't think anybody in our country should be okay with this.
I really don't.
And I really need it to be one of the cool causes, because you look at like what celebrities get behind it, there's all these cool causes, and it's like these kids just go unseen.
I think kids are cool. And they should be a cool cause.
Right. So we're going to
try and
make
it. So you get the last word.
The only problem is I'm not cool. So how are we going to make it a cool
cause? That's not true, folks. Don't believe that. But I'm going to give Lee the last word, but I wanted to thank you all for spending the time with us here on Folks Unfettered. And my name is Gene Folks, and as always, I like to be that brother of light, dropping wisdom in your left ear and knowledge in your right. Leah. Go ahead and let everyone
just
know.
Thank you. Anybody who stayed to the end of this, thank you so much for listening, because that might make you care about this too. So thank you. I hope you'll join the cause.
Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Gene.